Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Do you like what you're hearing right now? Then be sure to check out VOC Nation. Whether it's on VOCNation.com or your favorite podcast provider, VOC Nation offers the greatest in live and on-demand content, great interviews, and incredible insight from those who have lived the business. 7 days a week, VOCNation.com. And don't forget to check us out on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of WCW Retro. I apologize for the little bit of a late start. We had a little bit of technical difficulty getting connected to the show and then everybody being able to call in. I am your interim host, Howard Morgan, filling in for Stro Maestro as he continues to recover with his rehab and getting stronger each and every day. Just continue to pray for him, pray for his speedy recovery. He was on for a little bit last week. We were thrilled to have him on, and he's going to try to call in as often as he can, and then to get right back here on Thursday nights to resume command of WCW Retro just as soon as he can. And again, I don't do this show alone. My very special co-host is the man who once won a staring contest with his own reflection, and he actually taught a German Shepherd to speak Spanish. That's the agent extraordinaire, the one, the only, Chaz Moretti. Chaz, how are you doing tonight?
Well, it sounds like you're giving away all my secrets there, Howard.
just a couple. How are you?
You know why we had all these technical difficulties, right?
Why is that?
Just tell Brady to stop being a tightwad and pay the bills. It's either that or it's a conspiracy on the part of Rat Boy to keep me off the air. One of the two.
Well, the second half may be true. But you're saying, so this is a whole cover-up, and he didn't pay the bill, and he's trying to say
it
was a technical difficulty.
Yeah, I got technical difficulties. But anyway, happy to be here as always. It's freezing freaking cold in Chicago, but since I haven't seen the outside since November 22nd, I don't care. It's 78 degrees in my house. It's all good.
There you go. How is your rehab coming, brother? How's everything going?
Another day in the life, dude. Getting stronger every day. Arms and legs. And I think my wife is probably starting to get sick of me being in the house 24/7, but oh well. January 24th, we get fitted for the bionic. They're all lined up to make sure that it's 100% right, that it's the right style. This is a temporary. It's like any other injury. I said it on Monday, and I'll say it again. An athlete is only truly tested when he stares down the barrel at a major injury and comes out the other side stronger.
There you go. Absolutely. Absolutely, I love it. I saw you posted that, and I absolutely love it, and I absolutely 1,000% agree.
We're happy. Up, by the way, but I used it. I don't know who made it up. It's
right.
Unknown. So I took credit for it, like anything else in wrestling. You don't know who
right,
did it,
there
take
you go.
Credit for it.
Right. If you don't know whose gimmick it is, it's yours. You get it, and take it and run with it. It's all good.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give a shout out real quick, though, to Dave Kerr, to the Amazing Velvet. He's still battling cancer and all the nonsense that comes with it. So, all the best to the Amazing Velvet, all the best to Dave Burt. All right, we get them out of the way. So, now,
yes.
Excited about
yes.
the fact that Iron Claw opens up tonight in select theaters and then everywhere tomorrow. That ought to be interesting.
Yeah.
I won't be able to see it until it comes on Max. I guess in January it's going to be on HBO Max. So that's when I'll be able to see it because I won't be able to see it right now because of the fact that I can't get out of the house. So it's all good.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I haven't been excited to see it. It is looks to be a very good wrestling movie, but a very good movie, aside from that. And I haven't been this excited to see a movie in a long time. I don't know if we'll go out this week to do it.
They were taking a little bit of flap because they basically wrote Chris Von Erich out of it, which is stupid, but whatever.
And I heard that Michael Hayes wasn't happy with not being, an advisor or at least asked about the movie with as much history as he has with the Von Erichs, and it is what it is now, but it's probably one of the guys you should have at least had a conversation with.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't that Hunter Hayes that's playing him in the movie, who's a spot-on replica?
Yeah, and I tell you, they did a great job with casting the movie and getting, guys to have the look and not only look, but the build.
I haven't seen MJF yet in bleach blonde hair, so we're going to see that happen as he's playing Lance. That's not interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the almost forgotten Von Erich. It ought to be good.
Good
What's
old
that?
Ricky Vaughn. I said he was the not real Von Erich.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Waldo's son.
And I know tonight we're going to talk about Christmas matches and Christmas whether they're gimmick matches, whether it was matches that took place around on and around Christmas time. And now, Von Erichs had a good 3 or 4 year run there of doing shows on Christmas Day. We were talking about that.
More than that, almost a decade.
Yeah,
it started in '82 with the Christmas shows.
I went back and I found one from '83.
Christmas Star Wars started in '82.
'82. Wow, '82. Yep. Then Christmas Star Wars. It was what a star-studded card that was, really, from top to bottom. But before we
let's let Rhett for you before he has a conniption fit. He's going to sit there going, before Taz was. Yeah, whatever, dude.
I apologize, Rhett boy. I got caught up in my conversation.
We apologize in advance for the screeching you're about to hear. Cover your ears.
Yes, and this is generally the time of the show where our ratings kind of take a little dive. Ratboy, what's going on, buddy?
Man, it was cold out there this morning trying to be in an offshoot, passing out those flyers to that one show I'll be doing in a couple weeks. Boy, it was cold down Columbus, but I tell you what, everybody, I'll be there Saturday in an elk costume once again at Columbus Farmers Market, and plus, Chaz. I got you. Columbus Farmers Market.
Oh, nice.
Chaz, I found something today just for you.
Oh, yeah? What'd you find? Another leg?
No.
No, because I'm missing
something,
one, bro. I could use another one.
Something a lot better. I just handed it off to Santa Claus. He's going to drop it off on Christmas Day.
Bro,
he's going to be underneath
your
tree. Off
a 22-year-old blonde.
No, it's going to be underneath your tree. You ready for this?
Wait a second. So it's not a 22-year-old blonde with big gazooms. It's not a new leg. And if it's under the tree. I don't want a dog.
Yeah,
this is something that you really need.
I already told you what I really need, but that's okay.
Right.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
The best present ever. It's a wheelchair with skis on it so you can get out of the house.
Well, that'd be nice. I know Amy would like that. She told me today that she's – how did I put this nicely and appropriate for airtime? She's royally sick of me being home 24/7.
Right.
When it comes to your house, that means you could just jump on that wheelchair with the skis, get a dog, and tell the dog, say, yee-haw, let's go get an iron curl, baby.
Woo! I'm going to love to try to get down the stairs with that thing. You'll be reading
that. Yeah, right?
Your life has murdered. You can fit him into a success box.
But before we get into the topic of the show, I did read a rather interesting story, and I know we've given Vince McMahon and the WWE, you know, a lot of crap on here, you know, about its production and its, you know, I guess lack of interest over the last couple of weeks. But I just read yesterday or the day before that they signed Bray Wyatt to a Legends contract. And
yeah,
as I'm reading
you know,
it, they're
good about that stuff. They signed him to a Legend so that they can send the royalties to the family. And I think, you know, one thing, you can say what you want about Vince and Triple H and Stephanie and the rest of the family, Shane and whatnot, but they take care of their own, which is good.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. You know, all the stuff that we've, you know, how bad he is and whatever, whatever you think of him, they are taking care of this man's children.
Yeah, you can't bash a guy that sent Tammy Sitch to rehab 16 times. Not his fault.
This is true. Right, this is true. You know, and of all of the things that we criticize him for that we see on TV, it's the things that he does behind the scenes, like you said, to kind of take care of his own and, you know, to make sure that everybody's taken care of, that's not so much publicized or, you know, so getting as much of the spotlight, you know, that
you know,
I'm
going to say it one time. These internet marks get on my last nerve. Because you know what? Who invited them behind the curtain? I know I didn't.
Right.
Okay, so if they want to go, oh, you should have done this and you should have done that, and they want to keep exposing the business, you know, they can just change the channel. Because I'm sick of hearing from some 42-year-old fat guy living in his mother's basement, sitting on a computer, trying to tell me about my business, and he's never seen the inside of a ring.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it just, you know, and for every, you know, good story like I read there, I did one that was, I don't know who wrote it. It sucked me in because it said WWE Hall of Famer to debut on AEW Dynamite. So I'm like, oh, I didn't hear anybody signing with him. And not that I follow every single story. As I'm reading it, they're promoting it. I think it was AEW Dynamite. And you get about a third of the way through the article, and it's Jim Ross coming back to the broadcast position with Tony Schiavone.
Who cares?
Well, I get it. He's coming back, but the whole WWE Hall of Famer kind of is a little misleading in the headline. Like, I thought, you know, maybe they had some secret signing that they were waiting to announce, and it's just that Jim Ross was coming back. And I'm like, I just wasted 2.5 minutes of my life reading the article to find out that it's somebody that already works for the company. He's just coming back from whatever leave that he was on, and he's coming back to television.
Welcome to WCW 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Who cares?
Chad, what are your memories of?
Yes, you can't talk badly about these guys or they won't book you. They ain't booking me anyway. What do you care?
Right. Unreal. So, Jess, what are your memories of Christmas time as it relates to wrestling? Like, what are some of your memories childhood on up till now?
You know, prior to 1984, moving from New York in 75 to Chicago, 76 to Chicago, AWA didn't do a whole hell of a lot around Christmas time. They did Wrestle Rock. They did that Sunday show, but that was before Christmas, not during. But it wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on at Christmas time. But one of the shows that really stuck out with me prior to seeing all the Christmas Star Wars shows from WCCW was the day that actually killed one era in New York and started another, and that was on Boxing Day. That was on the 26th of December, 1983, when the Iron Sheik defeated Bob Backlund for the world title in Madison Square Garden. That was the end of the old WWWF and the beginning of the modern WWF. And so it was a evening, which was broadcast on Madison Square Garden TV, was something special, as all the garden shows were. If you hadn't been to a garden show between 71 and 83, you missed out, because those shows were electric, and they were always on a Monday night. And so the Boxing Day show was definitely on a Monday. And when the Iron Sheik defeated Backlund, you know, it was definitely a change in era. You knew that, you know, the old days were never going to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one thing that really came to mind, is that, the old days were never, ever going to be the same.
No, and I wish I would have taken, you know, those years for granted, because that's right around, you know, 82, 83 was when I was really starting to get into wrestling. You know, as we talked about last week, cable television was just kind of getting started, and you were exposed to a little bit more wrestling.
I don't know if it's still on the network, okay? I don't know if it's still on the network, but they used to have it in the old school section. They used to have the, in the 1983 season, they used to have the Boxing Day show where Backlund lost to the Sheik. And that's a great show.
Yeah, I'll have to check that, because I do shows, watch. Yeah, when I'm not watching something else on TV or the current product, I do turn on the network, and I do go back to the territory days, and I watch the old matches from Madison Square Garden, you know, the Boston Garden. I watch a lot of the Georgia Championship Wrestling, the old World Class Mid-South. And I just wish that, like, I knew that for me, that these were the glory days of what I would remember of wrestling. And it was at the time, because, you know, I was young. I was, you know, 12, 11. It was just another wrestling show that I got to watch, and it exposed me to a little bit more, you know, a little bit bigger audience of wrestlers that I really didn't know, you know, had existed, because we were kind of trapped in that, you know, the WWF New York, you know, territory at the time. And I just wish that I knew that it was, you know, that,
you know, like I said, Crockett didn't do a lot
era
on Christmas. There were very few that did a lot on Christmas. Crockett didn't do a lot on Christmas. Texas, it was big. Georgia, I'd have to look it up to see if they really did a lot of Christmas shows. And I know Florida didn't do anything on Christmas.
No, there is one. I was just scrolling through. Let me pull it back up again. It's from 1982, Georgia Championship Wrestling on Christmas Day. It was a six-man tag team match with, on one side, it was Andre the Giant, Stan Hansen, and Tito Santana against the Great Kabuki, the Masked Superstar, and the Super Destroyer was the main event.
Andre worked every Christmas somewhere. I mean, Andre was a working fool. He was working basically 350 odd days a year. I know they said he always took New Year's Eve and New Year's Day off. But he was working, other than that, he was working, you know, 50-odd weeks or 51-odd weeks a year. Let's just see what they've got here. So I'm just looking up the network. They basically, let's go in this season here. Where are you at? So that's 88. Let's go backwards. Let's see if they've got what they've got for 83. The nice part is they started in the 70s with the stuff that's on there currently, which I find interesting.
Yeah, I watched some of that, too. I go back into the 70s, and, you know, when it was almost pure wrestling at that time, it was hold for hold.
Oh, hell yeah, it was. Most definitely
it was. You know, it was, and when you look at it compared to today's product, we would say that these guys had, you know, a limited moveset, but the way they put the moves together, they, you know, you could have, you know, Pedro Morales and Gorilla Monsoon just saying, you know, have a match, and they may have only had five or six moves, but they would have a great 15-20 minute match using them five.
Well, you know who was You know who was underrated as all get out was Stan Stasiak.
Yes. Yes, he was.
Stan Stasiak was so underrated. Very good, very, very good wrestler. Very underrated.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And Stan was like a mainstay. So let's see, what do they have? So this is the 83 collection. Let's see what they got from the garden. Hold on. Yeah, they got it. It's still up there. December 26, 1983.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
51 Sirisky declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Watch it while you can. It's the whole card.
I'll have to check that out because I've already seen it before, but it's been a little while. And I'll have to see it again because that, to me, watching that, when I found out that, you know, the Iron Sheik beat Bob Backlund, I had no idea where the company was going after that. But I was in shock.
You know what the nice part was? Back in 83, we didn't think like that. We didn't think about the company. No one gave two craps about the promotion. You know what you cared about?
No.
Who's going to beat the Sheik?
Right.
Is it Backlund going to get his title back? Is it Hogan? Who's going to win? Who's going to beat the Sheik and when? We didn't know.
Is it going to be Tito Santana? Is it going to be you know Jimmy Snuka? Whoever it could have been, we just wanted somebody.
I would like to run into the fool that decided. Okay. I would like to run into the fool that decided to tell everybody how our business runs. Because I'd like to slap the crap out of that guy.
Yeah.
Okay? You go to the circus, you don't care how they perform the stunts. You just watch.
No.
You go to see David Copperfield? You don't want to know how he makes the elephant disappear. You just watch.
Right.
Well,
I just want to watch him watch that. Make that elephant disappear.
All these knuckleheads right now want to know what goes on behind the scenes. None of your business. Watch the damn show.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it for what it is. And I think, you know, this being the, you know, a magical time of year, we've lost that magic. We've lost that veil has been, you know, not only open but almost torn completely down. And you know, and I admire guys that today, the modern guys like an MJF that still, you know, keeps his character still wherever he's at, whether you know he's in front of a crowd or he's on a talk show or even just out in public. He is MJF every time he's in the public eye. He's nobody different. And
we've talked about this a million times. You know, we've talked about it a million times. It's always the same. Very few get it. And I don't have much use. I used to argue with these marks. Now I just don't care. I have no interest in arguing with stupid people.
Right, absolutely.
And I just don't. I don't have any interest in arguing with stupid people. You know, they used to always ask me. They used to ask me all the time. We don't know where your character ends and where you begins. What character? I am who I am.
Right.
And if I wanted you to know about my private life, I'd invite you to the house. Idiots.
Right.
Leave me alone.
That's like people tell me, wrestling's fake. Yeah, and Tom Cruise is really a fighter pilot. Yeah, I get it. I don't believe that Tom Cruise is a fighter pilot for 2.5 hours. You know, why can't you believe that, Hulk Hogan...
I love when they say wrestling's fake. Because then I invite them to come in for a fantasy camp. It's fake, huh? Okay. Come in and take a fantasy camp. Learn how to bump. See how soft the ring really is.
Right.
Oh, sure. Come on.
Yeah.
Spend your $50. Come on to the fantasy camp. Spend a couple hours, and we'll see if you reform your opinion.
Right. You know, and I, that invitation would go out to anybody that says that. You know, go for an hour. Try it for 1 hour, after the hour.
Christmas Star Wars started out in 81 when WCCW was still known as NWA Big Time Wrestling. Interesting.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Interesting. In fact, the first card, I'm just reading about this, the first card had Kerry Von Erich defeating Ernie Ladd for the American Heavyweight Championship. Bruiser Brody and the Great Kabuki went at it in a cage. Fritz defeated Gary Hart in a cage. And people would say, well, you have more than one cage match. That's because the reason why they have more than one cage match is that they rented the cage. And so since they rented it for one night, they stuck as many cage matches as they could. The other one which was interesting is El Negro Asesinino, who was a lucha from over the border in Nogales, he wrestled a young man named Richard Blood to a time limit draw. And if you know anything about wrestling, you know Richard Blood is Ricky Steamboat.
Ricky Steamboat.
And of course,
you
got to have the midgets. You got to have Tiny Tom and Little Tokyo. Jose Lothario wrestled Ernie Ladd. Blue Demon, whose son is still wrestling and managed by my good friend Carmine DeSpirito. Blue Demon and Al Madrill defeated Arman Hussein, alias the Iron Sheik, and Carlos Zapata. El Solitario, who was Mil Mascaras' brother, defended the UWA Junior Light Heavyweight Championship against Killer Tim Brooks. Tim Brooks was 12 biscuits north of light heavyweight, so that was a stretch. Great Kabuki beat Fritz Von Erich in a Texas death match. Kevin Carey and David beat Frank Dusick, Bill Irwin, and Tenju in a six-man. And then the famous Big Daddy Bundy won the Battle Royal in a two-ring Battle Royal. That was the very first Christmas Star Wars.
Wow. And that was in 81, you said?
That was in 81. And that was prior to... WCCW forming. But you know, the funny part is WCCW was, even though they were one promotion and you had Paul Bosch in Houston and you had Joe Blanchard in Southwest and you had, you know, all these different, they were all run out of the Dallas booking office. Fritz had all the talent.
Nice.
In 82, let's see if there's any notable matches in 82. David Von Erich and Bill Irwin for the Texas title. The Fabulous Freebirds as baby faces in a six-man tag. It was Hayes and Gordy and David Von Erich winning the six-man championship. Kevin defeated King Kong Bundy by disqualification, and this is when Kerry got his first title shot. Ric Flair beat him in the cage for the NWA World title. But that was 82.
Wow. 83 is what I have up now. That's one of the ones I look back, and that's one of the early ones that I remember actually watching, you know. It was a great card, you know. Jose Lothario was on the card. Jumbo Sharuda, Giant Baba was on there. In fact, Giant Baba defeated King Kong Bundy.
I saw Sharuda, Tenryu, and Baba wrestle a six-man in 85 in Chicago at the very first Super Clash. Man, Baba was older than dirt, but he could still move. You want to hit Baba at that time was older than dirt, but he could still move.
Nice. Yeah, I always liked Giant Baba. I thought he was very, I mean, he was, first of all, I mean, he you know, rightfully named him, he was big.
NWA world title, world champion.
Yeah, and just looked like, you know, he could just snap you in half with just one hand.
In fact, the way he won the title was a double underhook suplex.
Oh, wow.
It goes to figure. And then you had 83, you had David Von Erich challenging Flair and winning by DQ. And then Kevin and Mike beat the Birds in a Loser Leaves Town match. That's when the Birds were going to they were either going back to Mid-South or they were going to Crockett. I think they were going back to Mid-South.
Yeah, I think they were headed back to Mid-South at that time.
Which, again, was kind of funny because the talent swap between Mid-South and Texas was just phenomenal. So, I mean, again, but as the fan, we didn't care about any of that stuff. Talent swaps, going from territory to territory. We didn't care. We just wanted to know who won.
Right, yeah. Well, who was wrestling and who won?
Exactly. Yep. And if all you saw was world class, because cable back in 83 was there but not there, so if all you saw was just your local territory, you know, the Birds loser leaves town match, you're like, good, we don't have to see these idiots anymore.
Right.
Kind of reminded me of what happened back in the 70s when Bobby Heenan lost the loser, got suspended for, I don't know, 6 months in the AWA. And we didn't see him again for a few months. And we didn't know he went down to Georgia and ran down there. You know, restarted the family in Georgia with Bundy and Starr and Killer Carl Krupp and all that. We didn't know about that stuff. All we knew is we didn't have to hear Bobby Heenan's annoying-ass voice for a while.
Right. We were worried about Bobby Heenan until he came. Right, until he comes back again. And that's what's missing, you know. Into that, you know, and again, you know, the internet has a lot to do with that, but a
Jimmy
lot of it
Cornette,
has to do with that.
Jimmy Cornette said it best: you cannot put the feces back in the horse.
No.
Once you let it out, you cannot put it back in the horse. Period. Bobby Heenan said it. We showed the average person how our magic tricks work. Stupid. You don't believe me? Go on YouTube. Watch the Bobby Heenan shoot interviews. He says it more than once.
I've heard him say it probably at least 3 or 4 times in some of his interviews.
And to the quote-unquote workers who back in the mid-80s decided to let Dave Meltzer in on all our secrets, I hope you all die with festering boils because you ruined it.
I really wish that, you know, like I said, that magic, you know, never left, because obviously we can't get it back. But
forever, my brother.
There was just, there's something about that. And, you know, and again, especially with WCCW, you know, with all of the cards that they ran on Christmas Day, you know, and it was amazing that you're able to get people to come. And this Thanksgiving's, you know, a little bit different because by, you know, 3, 4 o'clock, everybody's done. And I can understand having a match at night, you know, going and into Starcade and all of that. But Christmas is a little bit different. You know, it's really, you know, to me, it was always about being home with family and, you know, going around to your grandmoms or this, that, and visiting people. but they still showed up on Christmas Day in
Texas. For a lot of folks in those territories in those days, those tickets were stocking stuffers.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, you look in your Christmas stock and you got two tickets to Star Wars. Oh, great, we're going.
I think it was – it might have been Tully Blanchard that said that. He was on a interview, and he was talking about, you know, how – especially down in Texas, kind of, you know, where he kind of cut his teeth. It was a big deal, you know, around, you know, the week of, you know, Christmas and New Year. Like, you would literally give two tickets to somebody as a gift, either on Christmas Day or the day after or whatever, for the shows that were going in and around, you know, the Texas area, because it was just so big, you know, in that state. And it was so well attended for the most part, you know,
You even take a look at movies, at fictional events. Rocky One comes to mind, 1976, right? When was the match held? New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, yes.
You know, the first thing
that
you ring announcer says, he was the promoter, welcome to the Spectrum and Happy New Year. So, I mean, having big events on holidays was, at the time, a proven moneymaker. Now, not so much. But then again, what is? I mean, ever since the pandemic, attitudes have changed about leaving the house. Even though we're, quote-unquote, no longer in the pandemic, which I found interesting, all of a sudden one day it was, oh, guess what? It's done. Gee, thanks for telling us, because yesterday it wasn't. Dumbasses. But
now,
Christmas show couldn't draw flies.
Right.
It just won't.
And even... You know, sticking with your Rocky reference, I think on Rocky IV when he battled Ivan Drago, I believe
Christmas.
It was in Russia on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day. Yeah.
Christmas Day.
Well, but don't forget it was Soviet Russia. But what they failed to understand is, even under communism, even Stalin and Khrushchev, Christmas, even though it was communist and they were supposed to be atheists, they still decorated Red Square for Christmas.
Yes, 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 they did.
Russian Orthodox Christmas is a little bit later than ours, than Christian Christmas, or Catholic Christmas, but they still decorated Red Square for Christmas. So, I mean, you know, Christmas is a big deal. Nowadays, again, not so much. You got the internet, you got Zooms, and people aren't traveling, and I get it. And, you know, we used to make jokes out of having the family gatherings, because every year you'd see those one set of cousins that got on your nerves last year. And guess what? They got on your nerves again this year. But, you know, regardless, I mean,
then,
you know, the Christmas shows, they weren't a big deal up north, though. Don't forget, our weather at the time, our weather sucks in the wintertime. You don't know what you're going to get. Some years you got snow, some years you got 70s and rain. Some years it's sunny outside and colder than crap. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get up here as far as weather is concerned. But down south, you pretty much understood, unless it was tornado season, what you were getting.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, even this year. This year, the forecast, at least for, you know, our area, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, it's going to be 53 degrees on Christmas Day.
Yep. 56 here in Chicago and rain. Rain the whole weekend. So anybody looking for a white Christmas, better put the postcards out there.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, and like I said, Vince Senior didn't run on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but he damn sure ran Boxing Day. He ran the 26th.
Yeah.
A, because it fell on a Monday, and it was his normal, the last Monday of the month was the normal Madison Square Garden show. And so what did he do? He gave people a gift. He changed the title after 6 years. And no one, and I don't care who you are, there would be some smart-ass out there going, oh, I knew the Sheik was going to win. Nonsense. Nobody picked the Sheik to win that match.
No, not at all.
Everybody thought it was going to be another walk. Everybody knew Backlund's shoulder was hurt, but they figured he'd pull it out against the Sheik. No one figured the Sheik to win that match. And, yes, I use words like win, figured. Notice I'm not using, they put the strap on. They didn't put the strap on nobody. Back in those days, yeah, they knew what was going on in the booking office, but they sure as hell weren't going to tell the average fan.
Right.
Because it was none of your
business. Yes. Right. And I remember, you know, when he threw the towel in, it just seemed like that towel took forever to fall to the mat when you watched it. And you're like, oh, like, well, you know, why did you do that? Like, you know, you took
first,
his chance
when
you away.
When I first watched it, I didn't even know it was in the ring until the referee was calling for the bell.
Right, right. Yeah, I was
all
like, you know, and I felt, you almost felt cheated because, right, and you almost felt cheated because Backlund's come back from far worse, you know, against other wrestlers. You know, why did you, to us, you know, watching it, you threw it in, you know, prematurely. You know, why didn't you just give him a couple of more minutes? He would have gotten out of it. He would have turned it around, and we never got to see that.
He passed out.
Right.
Dusty did and pass out from the pain.
Yeah, that was what, Kansas City or St. Louis when that happened?
Dusty did it five or six times. He did it in Greensboro against Flair one time. He passed out from the pain.
Yeah, I remember watching that. And you know, it's just, you're right. You know, I wish we, you know, could just relive or, you know, get those moments back and just get to experience it through, you know, that tunnel vision that we had, you know, in the 80s, you know, 70s and 80s, and, you know, be able to, you know, to capture that again.
My
well,
wife.
Rapley, what are your thoughts on Christmas, buddy? You've been a little bit quiet.
Yeah, I've been busy trying to fix my computer up here, you know, because it kept on freezing up for me. It's cold up here in the new school.
The library, actually go out and buy your own, you'd be all right.
Right.
It's cold up here in the North Pole.
Product of the New Jersey Public Library means it's not yours.
This way, you guys are down below somewhere, and I'm up a little higher than you guys.
Oh, here
well,
we go.
Well, some say that he's got to get a better internet connection. He's got connections.
No, I'm connected now.
So what are your thoughts on Christmas?
You guys, it's like to be down below, you know, like the third floor. I'm up on the sixth or seventh floor here, you know.
Oh,
it's cold.
Admit it. Nobody treats you as good as we do.
It's cold up this way. You know what I'm saying? No, I don't get you. When you move up higher in the world, it gets colder. In the summertime, it gets hotter. Okay, when you're up there in the penthouse suite and all that other stuff. With no swimming pool.
What's your memories of wrestling around Christmas time?
My memories is that one time, okay, when Santa Claus, okay, a gimmick, Hornswoggle to talk. Remember that one? Santa Claus. You know, and all of a sudden you start talking. That's a gimmick right there, you know?
Absolutely.
And plus there was another one that, which one was it? On Mighty Ride Paper, but he's been Santa Claus. That's a gimmick.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's another good one.
I got one for you guys. You ever remember the gimmick where they used to bring out the big Christmas present? And always inside that Christmas present was that Bella the Butcher?
Yes. Yep. That was great. Again, it's things that, you know, we'll never be able to get back. And, I loved it. And we can't forget, I think it was the USWA out of Memphis when they brought out the Christmas creature before he became Kane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few things that really, and listen, you know, Lawler and Dundee and them guys down there had a great, you know, a great vision, but then there were some things that just didn't work out so well. I think that was one of them.
The Dingo Warrior comes to mind. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
An Australian douchebag that is from California. Love it. God rest his soul.
Unbelievable. I don't remember who was in the box. It was Jim Cornette was talking about it. It was during a Mid-South TV show, and I forget who he said they had in a box as a present, and they had like a something going on in the arena at the studio, and they had to evacuate the studio for I don't know, like 45 minutes. Well, they never told whoever was in the box because they all forgot about
Abdullah.
Him. That the building was what was it?
It was Abdullah.
Was it Abdullah? Okay.
In the box the whole time.
Yeah, they left him in the box the whole time. Yes. That's what it was. That's right.
And,
oh.
You know, the funny part was, you know, when they used to do those things where somebody was under the ring, there was no way to tell them anything. You know?
No.
Abdullah standing in this box trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
What's going on?
He
that's right.
It was a long show.
He's like, oh, there must be a commercial.
I'm looking at the archives. It's 89 is when they stopped running Christmas. And they started running January instead in WCCW.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they ran Christmas up to – they ran Christmas – let's see if they ran Christmas in – yeah, they ran Christmas all the way up to 88. 89 is when they stopped. Then they went to January.
Okay. And they had, 1986, they had, you know, again, Star Wars 86 was – Abdul the Butcher and Bruiser Brody in a match on Christmas Day. How would you love to see those two guys go at it just one more time?
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing that, you know, and again, you know, you're watching it and just like, man, these guys just literally just hate each other. And no matter what stipulation you put on a match with these two guys, it was never enough for them. It's like they hated each other so much that no matter whether you put them in a cage or whatever, no disqual, whatever it was, it just never satisfied them. I mean, listen, we got entertained because they were great performers, they were great wrestlers, and it just these guys made you believe that they still wanted each other. Like the score was never going to be settled. There was never going to be a blow-off match where their feud was going to end, you know, and
we know
what happened to Bruiser Brody, and had that not happened, I think those two guys would probably still have gone on for another 15 years doing that, and everybody would still watched it.
Easily.
You know, they were just that good. And again, guys that were, you know, limited but not limited, but they were just bruisers in the ring. And just phenomenal talent to sit and watch.
They were wrestlers. You know, they weren't they weren't young kids who are going, I don't want to work on the holidays. You know, I should be at home. You want to be at home? Go get a real job.
Right. Right.
Take off those stupid looking tights and your gym shoes and your kick pads and go get a real job.
And then I pulled up another one. It was Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Jim Cornette's promotion, the Gangsters and the Rock and Roll Express at Christmas Chaos, 1994.
Yep.
And I remember the legal battles that the Gangsters, set out with.
It wasn't even their idea. Jimmy Cornette put them up to all of it. Hilarious.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know,
I mean,
honestly,
it wasn't even their idea. Jimmy put them up to all of it.
But it was just such a great, you know, backstory to everything, and you know, everybody that watches it, they bought into it hook, line, and sinker. You know,
sure
there was, and it was just so well done. You know,
because it was organic, Howard. They weren't reading from a script. Okay, they were given bullet points and told to convey this message. And that's what made it special and unique, is that they weren't just acting per se. Okay?
Right. Right. Yeah, now, on the same card, you had Cactus Jack and Tracy Smothers against Boo Bradley and Chris Candido. You know, again, great Buddy Landell and the Dirty White Boy for the heavyweight championship. You know,
Buddy
just
Landell,
great.
Buddy Landell was thanking God for Jimmy Cornette back in the mid-90s because nobody else wanted to book him.
Yeah,
he had gotten
a
bad reputation because of his demons and his transgressions and his – lack of reliability.
Yeah.
No one wanted to take a chance on Buddy Landell except for Cornette. And then Cornette, again, the genius that he was, and not a lot of folks know this, and they like to try to rip on this guy because of it. They claimed he was a wannabe, but he wasn't. Cornette says, I got to put Buddy Landell with somebody that'll help him carry the load. He put him with Paul Lee. They were the Nature Boys.
Right.
And so now...
Yeah.
A lot of folks wanted to rip on Paul Lee. A lot of these internet morons wanted to rip on Paul Lee, going, you're not a real Nature Boy. You're not. You know what? Why don't you go do some research and look up Smoky Mountain, and you'll find out that Paul Lee, when he was in WCW as an enhancement talent or as a carpenter or whatever you want to call him, I don't like that other evil word people like to use.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful. Okay? No, Paul wasn't a mark. And Paul wasn't a jobber either. That's the term I can't stand. Paul was a legit Nature Boy. Okay? He got that from Cornette. You know, Cornette took a chance on a lot of young guys. Case in point, Robbie Eagles. Need we go any further?
Yeah.
Cornette took a chance on him in the early 90s. And look what happened with him. The old maestro. Gorgeous George
III. Yes, absolutely.
But I would, you know what? God bless Stroh for being as gracious as he was and having that gimmick ripped away from him because of his pedigree and whatnot. I'd have fought that tooth and nail, but Stroh was smart.
Absolutely. You know, and I always liked Buddy Landell, whether I liked him or, you know, appreciated what he did. He was one of those guys that, you know, had a ton of potential. He could talk. You know, he could work, but his own demons and his own vices are kind of what did him in. And like you said, he became unreliable. Nobody wanted to work with him. And you know what a shortened career he had because of of the things that he liked to do that other people may not have liked to do or could handle doing and without getting out of control. But I always liked him, in Mid-South. I mean, I'm in South Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling is where I first saw him. And he's with J.J. Dillon at the time. And J.J. Dillon was his manager. And I thought those two guys were great together, because they could both talk.
Yeah. And the funny part is, you take a look at these guys, right? You take a look at Buddy being managed by JJ, and who was the feud that he had? Ric Flair. It was the carbon copy of the feud that Flair had years earlier with Buddy Rogers. Only Flair didn't pass the torch, so to speak, because, again, Buddy was all messed up and couldn't, and couldn't control himself.
Yeah.
But again, when you watch them work, you don't know what was going on inside of Buddy's head or what he was on or what he was drinking or smoking or doing whatever. Because Buddy, he got in the ring. He was Nature Boy Buddy Landell.
Yeah, it was go time. When the bell rang, it was go time.
I mean, I always tell the story, and I tell it with admiration, not with disdain. DAC, about 5-6 years ago, there was a singles match at the Showcase show between Marty Jannetty and Sam Houston, and their notorious part at the time, they were both notorious partiers, okay? Sam and Marty were at the bar downstairs from the venue. And they had to go get them from the bar. They went from the bar to Gorilla to the ring. Okay? They get in the ring, introductions made, bell rings, and they were as sober as two priests on Sunday. You could never tell that they were drinking 5 minutes earlier. Because they're professionals. That's what they did. Nowadays,
look at the same man. He always drinking before his match.
He drank on the way to his match.
Right, he drank on literally on the way to the on the apron of the ring on the way to the ring.
Yeah.
You know, the guy was as safe as they came. You know, a guy that got ripped on a lot. New Jack was completely safe in the ring unless you double crossed him or pissed him off.
Right,
and
he said that. He said that in a lot of interviews that you know he was willing to work with anybody. But he felt if
the
you
only
were
guy
taking
that
liberties,
he wanted to hurt, the only guy that he truly wanted to hurt was Vic Grimes because Vic tried to hurt him. Can't blame
the
guy.
Right. Right.
But, you know.
Yeah, and he gets a bad rap a lot, you know.
Nonsense with the young kid who BS'd everybody into letting him work with the mass transit.
Yeah, the mass transit, yeah.
All that kid had to do to be safe in that ring is keep his big mouth shut.
Right.
But you don't go in there.
Right.
I don't care if you're – even if you are a trained rookie. You're a rookie. Eyes and ears open, mouth shut. He goes
right
in that locker room going, what do you want to – instead of asking the vet, what do you want to do tonight? Oh, I got ideas. I want to do this, this, and this. Okay. We'll walk and talk. We'll see you out there.
Right.
Just – it's stupid. It's bad business.
Yeah,
I
listen to a lot of right. No, I get it. I listen to a lot of podcasts when they, especially when they reference Ernie Ladd and just the mentor he was to a lot of wrestlers at the time. You know, guys that were maybe struggling or you know trying to get in, and he would you know and. Jim Cornette does it great when he imitates him. You know, he tells him, you know, come sit under the learning tree. And Ernie Ladd would talk to these guys.
I saw Ernie Ladd wrestle in September of 1977 at the International Amphitheater in Chicago. And him and Dick the Bruiser were in a Texas death match, and they went 17 rounds.
Wow.
To the finish.
Mm.
Wow.
Those were big men going 17. Now, don't forget, those were 17 three-minute rounds with a minute rest
yeah
in between. So 51 and 17 is 68 minutes they were in that ring. These
that's
kids now get blown up
for...
after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Why? Because they got to get their
first that's a long time for anybody to be in the ring, let alone two big guys to be in the ring.
Yeah, but, you know, now these kids got to get their Cirque de Bullshit in, and they get blown up after 5 minutes because they're going a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the groups that are
it?
Yelling, this is awesome, couldn't do it themselves, ever.
There was, I forget who it was. It was Stone Cold was wrestling somebody, and I can't remember who he was talking about, but he was telling them, dude, slow down, like you're moving way too fast. Like this match is going to be over in like 20 seconds if we keep this pace up. You got to slow it down. And he's like,
you look at it this way.
A minute or two, he slowed down, and they had a good. He said he had a good like 11-12 minute match, but
there used to be
there's a little bit of energy there.
There used to be a prerequisite in wrestling that if you were going to be the NWA world champion, you better go 60.
Right.
Because three quarters of your matches were broadways.
Yeah.
60-minute draws, night in and night out.
Yeah, and also they didn't call Ric Flair the 60-minute man for nothing.
He wasn't the only one, though. They all did it. Harley did it. Dory Funk Jr. did it. Terry Funk did it. Flair, Dusty. Dusty not as much as the rest of them, but he did it. And they all went 60. You know, New York, they didn't do 60-minute draws a lot. Backlund did a little bit. Superstar Billy Graham, as much as I love his work and admire his promos and his ability to carry the crowd, Superstar couldn't go 60 if his life depended on it.
Right.
He just couldn't. He wasn't built that way. And New York was a different animal.
Right.
New York,
Wait a minute. There's something wrong, okay, what you just said.
What's that?
Okay.
What's
wrong,
bro?
What happened to that in the WWE? They don't got no double count outs or nothing like that no more. So we straight up in a ring now.
Bro, you're right, but they didn't have that back in the 70s and 80s either. Superstar Billy Graham, if you look at his record, never went 60 minutes. Not once.
Because sometimes double qualification, nobody didn't win. That's
right,
crazy,
like you
know?
Said, New York wasn't built that way. Look at the cage matches back in the old days in WWF mm-hmm. and the WWF. They weren't pinfall or submission inside the cage. You got in and your objective was to escape.
Yep.
Right.
That was it. Different animal. You go down south of the NWO,
absolutely.
It was pin or submission. Now, guess what? In the old AWA back in the 70s, before they changed the rules, it was pin or submission, and then you had to escape. That's rough. Nick Bockwinkel had more cage matches where he got the pin and the submission and barely got out with his life because you had to do both in order to win.
Yeah, I do remember watching a couple of those early and not really understanding, you know, because, again, not being, exposed to it. Like,
yep. The logic between Stanley Blackburn and Wally Carbo, and unknowingly, because no one knew about it at the time up front, and Burn Gagne was, that you had to beat your opponent and then get out. That's how you won the match. And that's why you didn't see a lot of cage matches in the AWA. You just didn't. They were true blow-off matches.
Right.
The reason why NWA title matches were in cages wasn't because it was a lot of times they were feud blow-offs, but it wasn't because these guys wanted to kill each other and then escape. It was to keep others from interfering. So you put them in a cage.
Right.
Starrcade 83 right. was to keep Orton and Slater and everybody else that Harley had hired to get the bounty on Flair out of the ring.
Right. And man, what a great deal that was with, you know, because I just watched the NWA Worldwide, I think it was what it was at the time, episodes where Slater and Orton were coming in, you know, to cash in on the bounty that Hardy Race had put on Ric Flair's head. And I thought, man, what, you know, again, watching it, you know, as a fan, you're thinking there's no way Ric Flair's making it to Starrcade. These two guys are going to find him somewhere, whether it's in the ring, in the locker room, in a parking lot, at the grocery store, wherever, and put an end to them, and they're going to have to find another opponent for Harley Race because Ric Flair's not making it.
Came out later. Now, you notice that Harley's bounty was $25,000.
Right.
Okay. Do you know why that number is significant?
No.
And no one knew this at the time, but we know it now because it's all come out in the wash. The deposit on the NWA World title that each champion had to put up, that was kept in escrow, and that he got back with interest upon losing the title, was $25,000.
I forgot about that.
You had to have 25 grand or you weren't going to become champion. And so
right.
the home promotion usually put that 25 G's up. I mean, Sam Muchnick and Bob Geigel put it up for Harley.
Right.
Crockett put it up for Dusty and for Flair. You know, those were the guys that had their 25K put up for them. So when they, you notice Harley got his, again, if we had known then what we know now, you knew Flair was going to win then because Harley got his 25 G's back.
Right.
But again, it was as much simpler, and yeah, I'm going to sound like an old man. It was a better time because we didn't need to know all this nonsense that we know now. We didn't.
No, yeah. No,
okay?
Not at all.
We didn't need to know. You know, I'm going to tell you something.
We just enjoyed the show for what it was.
Going through the ordeal that I went through last month and being worried about getting home to my wife and making sure that she was okay and just treating what, you know, treating this event that happened, which was, you know, again, I'm not going to downplay it and say it's not life-changing. It is, but I treat it like any other sports injury, even though it wasn't a sports injury. And the reason for that is I don't need people to know what goes on inside my head. You know, good days and bad days, more good than bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to let you know what goes on in my booking office.
Right.
You just got to know. Is Chad going to come back from this? Yeah. No,
right.
I'm just saying. But the thing is, you know, what do you know? Well, Chad is going to come back from this. You're damn right I am. Bigger,
right.
Bolder, and stronger than ever. Now, have I put a lot of the old animosity behind me? Yeah, I put it behind me. Because I'm going to tell you something. When you go through something like this and you've come close to dying, a lot of it just doesn't matter anymore. It's stupid.
Right.
Okay, old grudges and whatnot are just dumb. A lot of it just doesn't matter anymore because, again, our business has changed so much, there's not much left to protect. But now, will I still continue to kayfabe when I come back and I work shows? Absolutely I will. You know,
right.
am I legit staring down the barrel of a million plus in medical bills? Absolutely I am. The current tally is 1.1 million and rising.
Mm.
They haven't finished adding it up yet. They haven't included the cost of my prosthetic power knee that I'm getting, all of that, because I want to be walking as normally as possible, okay, and working
right.
again at some
of course.
Point. You know, that's another 100,000. So it's, now you're looking at 1.2 mil. I'm not going to go out there. I'll say it here because, you know what, I'm trying to prove the point that it doesn't matter because people are still going to see me and see the progress that I'm making, and I'm going to let you in on what's going on with me. And, you know, not that I'm looking for attention because I'm not. You know, I spent 10, 12 days in the hospital before anybody knew what was going on. And my wife had to ask me more than once, do you want me to let people know what's happening with you? Finally, I broke down. I said, yeah, let them know. Let them know what's going on. You know, but I was still protecting kayfabe up until November 5th. So I had one surgery
right.
already. I was in the hospital for 5 more days. I was in the hospital for a total of 6 days before I let anybody know what the hell was going on. And again, it doesn't change anything because, you know, the persona of Chaz Moretti is still a millionaire brat sports agent. Just so happens that now that people know what's going on with me and I kind of let them in a little bit, I don't think I'll ever go back to being a heel because that ain't going to happen. People actually like me now, which kind of sucks. Bad for business, but whatever. You know, it is what it is. I mean, but here. So is there good and bad parts to the internet? Yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate. And again, I didn't look for attention, but I'm fortunate to know that, you know, veterans like Don Morocco took time out not only to read my post, but to comment on it and to wish me well. You know, and then
wow.
There's a guy I grew up watching. And Don sends
me
Don
Morocco.
And Don puts a comment on there, you know, have Merry Christmas in Hawaiian and, you know, keep up the work. People are taking notice of you. And I'm like, cool, appreciate it. You know, Baby Doll, Nicola Roberts has been one of my most ardent supporters. And I truly appreciate it. You know, they don't have to. But again, it's
right.
nice that they do. But if I'm working a match again, and in order to ensure my client winning means I got to cheat. Guess what? You can take your well wishes and you can shove them up your rear end because I got to do what I got to do to win.
Right.
You know, I've had a couple that said, oh, that Chaz Murray. I had one guy, I won't name him because I'm not going to give him the credit to put him over, so to speak. Yeah, I wish he would die. Well, guess what, pal? I ain't dying anytime soon, and you want to know why? Here, I can tell you. The nice part is I can tell you two ways. I can tell you the real way, which is I am truly grateful for all the love and positivity and support that's been shown to me and shown to my wife, Amy, over the past month. That's the real answer. And the Moretti answer is God don't want me, and the devil's afraid of me.
There you go.
You know, and again, Christmas time. What does it mean? What does it mean now? It means something different now. It means that I'm here enough to see it. Because I mean, had I not gone to the hospital, I mean, my wife was begging me to go to the hospital 2 days prior, and I didn't do it because I'm a stubborn old fool. But you know, had I not gone to the hospital when I did, 2 days the sepsis would have been in the bloodstream, attack all the major organs, and I'd have been dead. And that's reality.
Right.
That is reality, plain and simple. And, you know, the weird part is I never said this to anybody, but I'll say it here because we're amongst family, friends, and fans. The dreams that I was having when I was, you know, half delirious between Sunday and Tuesday, you know, between the 29th and the 31st of October, they were dark. They were sinister. They scared the hell out of me because, you know what, I was actually – staring at the abyss. And it's a sobering idea when you look back at it. And I asked my wife about this a couple of days ago, and she says, you were dying. She goes, you were seeing what happens on your way to seeing the light. You were dying.
Mm-hmm. I saw the light. I know what
and, you know, I wasn't ready to die yet. I had too much going on.
Right.
You know, and now here, with the thank God with the advances in modern technology that I'm going to wind up with a bionic. Notice that they don't really say prosthetic anymore because there's varying grades of it. I'm going to wind up with a bionic that's going to make me to those that don't know no better. It's going to look like it never happened. Number one. And to those that do, they're going to remark at the quality of life that I now have. It's not
right.
The end of the world. 20 years
right.
ago, it was the end of the world. Now it's not.
Yeah.
You know, would I love to put on a Christmas show at some point as a promoter? Sure, I would. But as Al Snow said one time when we had this conversation, Christmas shows right now just won't draw. They just don't.
Right.
Because like you said, Howard, people want to have a – they've got 1,000 other things to do other than go to a wrestling show at night on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm. Right, on Christmas
times.
Day, yeah.
That's it with your families and all.
Yeah.
It's a different time. But no, are they going to run a full slate of shows? Are they going to run a full slate of shows on the 23rd? Sure you will. You'll see every indie promotion that normally runs at that time will be running. But it's not Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Same thing with New Year's. No one's going to run on New Year's Eve on a Sunday or New Year's Day on a Monday, but they'll run Saturday night. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but
no,
you know, New Year's was and will always be my favorite holiday of the year. Because why? It's tailor-made for persona. It's tailor-made for what I like. I like the finer things in life. I used to go to Vegas in my younger days 6 times a year, and definitely on New Year's. Many a New Year's Eve, I'd be at the dice table at Caesar's Palace, bombed out of my mind, making money.
I want to plug in something real quick, okay?
Go ahead.
All right. This New Year's Eve coming up at 2:30 in Burlington City, like a firehouse there, okay? I'm going to break the news right now. We got Tommy Dreamer coming in for this one show for New Year's Eve.
Wow, in Burlington City, huh? Wow.
The STO. And plus, we got Johnny Cashmere on the show. You know, Johnny Cashmere is running the whole thing. You know who Johnny Cashmere is?
Sure we do.
Yes.
Well, he's running his own show, and he got me working with him. I'm passing out the flyers for him and all.
Attaboy.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. But I just thought it was interesting.
Where's this at? I said the news broke out earlier today, and I just said, let me break it out on here now, because there is a show for New Year's Eve with Tommy Dreamer.
And do you know what? Do you know what firehouse it is in Burlington?
On Burlington.
Burlington City, New Jersey.
Yeah, Burlington City, New Jersey. Hang on.
So now do they pay off the hot dogs?
Hang on. The Mitchell Fire Hall. The Mitchell Fire Hall.
Which one?
Right off of,
I'm sorry,
the Mitchell Fire Hall, right off of 130 there.
So what do they pay off? And they pay off in hot dogs or cheesesteaks?
Huh?
Soft pretzels.
Oh, they pay off in soft pretzels. Oh, I'm in.
They pay off
in
soft pretzels. Right.
As long as they got hot mustard, I'm all in.
Well, I'm just going to go right out of the firehouse and go right across to 130, go to McDonald's, get some burgers.
Nah, dude, go to the firehouse, tell the fireman to start making some chili. What, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
right,
chili.
Have them make some chili.
I'm going to have to take a big bottle of Fireball. Fireball is in the ring.
I can't drink anymore, Rhett. Sorry.
I do want you to blue moon.
Yeah, if they gave me a wooden leg instead of a bionic one, then I could drink because I know where to store the booze. But, yeah, I can't do that no more.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
There's a little compartment in his leg.
It was kind of funny, Ricky Knight, when I was talking to Ricky Knight and I told him what happened, Soraya Knight gets on there and said, oh, you're an official peg leg. I said, that's right. I'm in charge of the Black Pearl now. Forget Barbosa.
Very
I'm
nice.
In charge of the Black Pearl.
Right. But I just put up an interesting match that happened on Christmas Day in 2006 between probably
– okay.
Two of the best that ever did it. And it's Ricky Morton against Bobby Eaton in 2006.
Oh.
It's Southern States Wrestling.
Can you imagine the amount of selling that went into that match between Ricky? I mean, Ricky could get sympathy from a demon the way he sold. Bobby, too. Bobby sold as a heel better than all – 3/4 of the guys working.
No. Yeah, and you know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and probably more as we continue on, that if these guys now could watch a match against the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express, and just learn from that and watch their promos, this business would be so much better. It would be so much better.
Howard, that one part is not their fault. You've got television writers writing scripts.
Yeah.
There's nothing for them to learn. They got to read lines. There's nothing for them to learn. They lose the art form. They lose the magic.
You know,
I mean,
that
part I'll defend the wrestlers on. That's
right.
Not their problem. I can't say it's not their problem, but it's not their fault. They're being hamstrung by television writers. Again, guys that never did a lick in the sport.
Yeah, no. I listened to Jim Cornette when he was running Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and when he was involved, I think he was involved in OVW, or they had a close relationship there.
Well, he was with
he
OVW
had a lot
for
of,
a long time.
He had classes, he had wrestling classes, guys, conditioning and cardio and bumping and things like that. But he also would teach them, you know, how to do promos. And he brought up, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express. He brought up Dusty's Hard Times promo, which will go for down forever as one of the best promos ever. And aside from that, he taught financial responsibility to these guys. What to do, you know, once you get paid, what to do with your money to make sure you still had money.
Gave them bullet points, Howard. All he told them was convey this message. How do I do that, Jimmy? It's up to you to figure out.
Right.
Convey the message.
That's it. And he would talk, you know, at length about, you know, going to, you know, down to Atlanta to do a TV taping. And they would spend hours doing promos. And the guys were like, no, okay, we got to do, you know, we got to do this again. And they would do it again and again and again just to perfect it. And they get it right.
And if you look at it, even the only time they ever stopped in Atlanta on the TBS TV tapings, the only time they ever stopped tape is when Jimmy made the reference to the Space Shuttle Challenger. That was the only time they ever stopped tape. After they threw the fireball at Ronnie Garvin, they said, Ronnie, space went up faster than the Challenger. Everything got shut down. Dusty's in the control booth. And the call comes up, the lights went dark, cameras went off, and sound is done, and you hear Dusty over the intercom, and this is what Cornette said, Jim Cornette to the booth.
Yep.
And Jimmy gets up there.
he told that story, too.
And Stroh tells that story as well as anybody. Kid, we don't talk about no spaceship blowing up. Go do it again.
Right.
But again, Jimmy doesn't make that mistake if he's not given the freedom to convey the message.
Right.
Okay. If he's not convey the message, he doesn't learn.
Right.
He doesn't have that. Kid, you got to go back.
Right, and it's what you said earlier. It was just organic. It was something that happened. We all knew it happened, and he was tying in wrestling to what was happening today. You know what happened.
I think it was I think it was less than a month before that taping that Challenger went up. Okay, so it was very timely. One of the things that I'm very fortunate in my own little career, I didn't have any type of success to the level of a Cornette or any of these guys. But one thing I'm proudest of is I never had a promo written out for me. Not once. I've had bullet points given to me on all my promos, but not once have I ever had a promo where I read off word for word. Never.
Right.
And my promos are good. And yeah, I'll toot my own horn. I don't care. My promos are good because I was allowed to be me.
Yeah.
I was allowed to convey the message as I saw fit.
Right. Yeah. I heard Cornette and Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson tells it a little bit better because he was a little bit more involved at the time, that when they did these promos, the amount of things that these wrestlers had to remember, you know, what and when you say that they wrote their own promos, they did, but there were things that they could and couldn't say because of when the show was taped as opposed to what we were seeing, you know, on television. So there were things that had happened already that these guys couldn't reference because we as fans hadn't seen it yet. And they got to remember all of the stuff, where they're at, where they're going, what time, go ahead.
Yeah, if you learn promo structure properly, a promo is used basically to promote your next event. So the five things you have to have in every promo is you have to have the date of the next event, the venue in the city, bell time, who's going to be your opponent, and for me, who am I managing? So I have to put over the date, put over the venue with the city, put over the title of the show and the bell time, put over my opponent, and put over my client. Everybody's like, why would you want to talk strongly about your opponent? Because if you don't put your opponent over, if you don't show some pseudo respect for your opponent's ability, Why would anybody pay $10, $15, $20, $25 to come see the match? If all you're going to say is my guy is so strong, he's going to kick this guy's ass and that guy sucks, why would I want to spend my hard-earned dollar to actually see it? You already told me what was going to happen.
Right, right. And that's where Arn Anderson was talking about the journeyman that he worked with, that if you just went out and that's what I loved about, Crockett Promotions versus McMahon was McMahon, you knew that Jose Luis Rivera was never going to win a match against a top-tier talent. It just wasn't going to happen. But it filled a spot. It was a good 4 or 5 minute match. But then you get guys down in Crockett, you know, George South, and even Denny Brown to a certain extent, that looked like they had a fighting chance. How many matches did George South have against Ric Flair where George South gave him as much as he could handle, and Ric Flair would barely escape, even though the match only went 6 or 7 minutes. He would
compliment you on that reference, and let me dovetail off of it a little bit. Jose Luis Rivera, Johnny Rods.
Hey, yeah, Johnny Rods, yes.
Yeah.
Vince Senior, do you know what those guys actually were for Vince Senior? Do you know why their matches never went more than 10 minutes? And they were usually against either rookies or guys that were new to the territory. Do you know why that was the case? So we didn't know it back then. We just thought Johnny Rods gets his butt kicked. Do you know why they were like that? Johnny Rods and Jose Luis Rivera were the in-ring talent agents for Vince Sr. They worked you in a match and you sucked. They would let Vince know that you suck, not to book you again.
Wow.
Those guys were actually had a lot of pull backstage. Because they were the ones, Steve Lombardi too. They were the guys in the ring evaluating you. Okay, don't forget a young Rocky Johnson Jr., The Rock. His first match was against Steve Lombardi. And if Steve didn't give him a positive bill after that match, guess what? Good old Flex Cabana would have been shown the door, no matter whose kid he was. Okay?
It's just
Steve
like, it's like X-Pac against John Cena.
Even before that, when X-Pac was the 1-2-3 kid with Scott Hall with Razor Ramon, that was his evaluation match.
Wow. I didn't know that about Rivera.
That's how he became the 1-2-3 kid.
Rivera and Johnny Rods, more than Rivera. Those guys, he was the evaluation talent for new guys wanting to come into territory.
Wow.
You get past Johnny Rods, you earn Johnny Rods' respect, and you have a booking. And if you didn't, you don't. Because Johnny Rods ran the wrestling part of Gleason's gym in New York.
I know he trained a lot of guys. You know, that's why I never understood why he didn't get, elevated to that next level. But he was already way above that next level, behind the scenes.
His job wasn't to get elevated. His job was to evaluate the guys coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Same thing with
I actually met Johnny Rods too.
Take a
real
look
cool
at the Guerrero family, right? Okay, you had
Gordon,
top talent. Chavo Sr., top talent. Chavo Jr., top talent. Eddie, top talent. Mondo and Hector, not so much. Why? Do you want to know why? Mondo and Hector were the trainers and the evaluators.
Wow.
It was their job, as they were wrestling, to critique, to let the California promoters at the Olympic Auditorium, who at the time, back in the mid to late 70s, was Mike LaBelle and his brother Judo Gene LaBelle. It was, and Gene Lovell, too, was never a world champion. Like, they were the evaluative talents. They were there to evaluate to make sure you knew what the hell you were doing.
Wow.
Pure and simple. You know, in fact, one of the few battle royals that was never predetermined was the Los Angeles annual battle royal at the Olympic. Different people won that match. Andre was in that match every year. He won one time. The first one was won by Bruno Sammartino. That was the only time that the boys were told, work it out in the ring. Okay?
Sure.
And they knew when to do good business. They knew when it was someone's turn and when it wasn't someone's turn. But again, we're getting, you know, I know the theme was we've got off topic a little bit. But again,
no, that's fine. No.
we didn't need to know what they knew and still be highly entertained.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I always liked Johnny Rods. You know, and I liked a lot of the journeymen, like especially around here in the Philly metropolitan area, I'll call it. A mainstay from most of the 80s, I would guess, you know, on the mid-card level was S.D. Jones.
Yep.
You know, never won a lot of matches, but was a heck of a worker.
He trained
a lot of guys, and Johnny Rods was the same way. I mean, he was big here, because New York and Philly are only 2 hours apart. You know, those two guys were always at the spectrum.
Look at the guys that ran the power plant. Okay? Norman Smiley and Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
Buddy Lee Parker, yeah.
The State Patrol never won a lot. But old Sarge was put in charge of training everybody at the power plant. Everybody. Past Sarge.
Yeah.
Had to get past Smiley.
I heard some quote-unquote horror stories about, you know, Parker stretching people just to, you know, kind of like Stu Hart did in his dungeon, just to see what these, you know, guys and girls were made of. And are they cut out? Who did?
Bob Holly did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure that they were cut for the business.
And to a different degree, Al Snow. Al Snow wasn't he was physically demanding, but he was more mentally demanding. If you weren't smart, Al Snow would expose that weakness. And you would either learn.
Right.
And people look at Al Snow and all they see is the head gimmick and they don't understand the brains behind it.
Right.
Guys are genius. Guys are genius.
I watched that that Hulu show that they had on with him, and it was it gave me more of an insight than I wanted, but it showed you the brains that Al Snow has for the business.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you've seen the series, and that's about 8 episodes.
No, I've not.
They were culminating in their big event. I can't remember what it was. But
OVW,
they kept telling Al Snow, man, listen, to make this work, man, you got to get back in the ring. He's like, no, I don't want to. Like, early on in the series, it wasn't making sense. He's like, I'm not just going to do it just to throw off. It's got to make sense. He's like, because it's got to make sense to the fans. They got to want to know why are you getting involved, like you haven't been involved through this point, and all of a sudden you're involved. And as it went on, you know, it started to develop, and you know, he did, you know, get into the match, and by the end of the series, it made a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it shows you he's not just listen, we're not in it to make a buck per se, but we're in
it
makes sense, and the people keep coming back. They gotta want to keep coming back to each show that we have, and it's got to make sense for us. It makes sense for them to keep coming back.
There's a young kid that works for OVW, that works for Al right now, that I've known since he was 7 years old. His father is a big promoter up in Wisconsin, and that's Cal Hero. And there's just a kid that grew up in the business, and he's got his head screwed on straight, and he's learning the right way. And he's taking,
right.
You know, they're bringing him along nice and slow. And he's over.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's learning. You know, and like you said, in
right.
the old days, a lot of guys learned on the job. You know, who was one of the evaluative talents up in the AWA territory? Nacho Barrera. Nacho Barrera is a very old and dear friend of mine, and was kind of funny. The first time I had seen Nacho wrestle when I was a kid and get his butt handed to him by just about everybody. That
yeah.
you know, from he's worked everybody from El Santo all the way up to Hogan. Okay, when they were in
yeah.
the AWA. Okay, the guy started.
Yeah, no, I remember watching him. Yeah, I remember watching him on the early AWA show.
He started in 1968. Okay. This guy never
wow.
had to worry about a job because Vern took care of him. Bruiser took care of him. But he was a worker. You know, and I'm working a show in Indiana, and it's the first time I was with this promotion. Where I'll never forget it. We were working a high school gym. And they were mentioning that Nacho was in the audience. And I said, Nacho who, Barrera? And they're like, yes, I got to meet him. Bring him back here. Two kids that I was managing didn't have a clue. I said, how long you two idiots been working for this promotion?
3 years.
3 years. And you don't know who Nacho Barrera is?
We know he's just, you know, he's a nice old guy that sits in the audience.
You goofs. I said, he's been working before you were a thought.
Right.
I said, he's worked everybody from El Santo all the way up to Hogan and Bockwinkel. Knuckleheads. You don't know who this guy is. You've never once bother to ask him his thoughts or his critique or anything.
No.
Yeah, you're stupid. That's why they gave you me as your mouthpiece. Get out of here. But they brought back Nacho, and I explained, you know, what a big fan I was and admirer of his work, and he critiqued my work, and I took notes because that's what you're supposed
yeah.
to do.
That's what you're supposed to do.
And of course, I always carried at least 3 jackets with me in my garment bag. Again, I didn't say gear bag because any manager that takes a suit and stuffs it into a duffel bag is an idiot. And we had a couple of those out there. I said, where's your garment
bag?
Oh,
God.
Oh, I just folded it up and put it in a duffel bag. You're a goof. Get away from me. You're not in my level.
You're out of my level.
You brought up Nick Bockwinkel, and I just watched what was I just watching? One of the old USWA shows, and Lawler was hurt.
Yeah.
Austin Idol and Tommy Rich had turned on him and
yeah,
put him
yeah.
on the shelf for a couple of weeks, and he was looking for a tag team partner, so he called Nick Bockwinkel. And at the time, Lawler and Nick Bockwinkel's relationship was still kind of tenuous. It wasn't – they weren't buddies. You know, they were – for all intents and purposes, they were rivals. And they interviewed Austin Idol and Tommy Rich, and Tommy Rich was saying, you know, I know that when I go to the corner to tag Austin, he's going to be there for me. You know, we're best friends, blah, blah, blah. He's like, Lawler, you don't know if Bockwinkel's going to be there for you and this, that, and the other thing. And then they cut to a Nick Bockwinkel interview, and Nick Bockwinkel, being who he is, gave a really great – I mean, talked probably 5 levels above my comprehension – what he was saying was, he's like, you know,
I don't need an encyclopedia to understand Nick's promos.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I need an encyclopedia, a thesaurus, a translator. I need all kinds of stuff. And he's like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, take Lawler's tag when he needs it. Because, you know, he's like, we don't really get along. He's like, we're not friends. We're not going out to a party afterwards. We're not socializing. We're not going out to dinner. He's like, but I can tell you one thing, Tommy Rich. I don't like either one of you two. So if I get the chance to get my hands on you, he's like, you're damn sure knowing I'm going to get my hands on you. And I was like,
and of course,
wow, like that.
Why would you believe that promo? What is that promo
like,
designed to do?
If they were selling tickets, I would have bought one right there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Because
that promo's designed to make
you
buy a ticket.
Now your
curiosity's up.
Right, because I don't know if I can trust Bockwinkel with Lawler But I kind of believe that if he gets the chance, he's going to do some damage to Tommy Rich and Austin Idol. And that's what I want to see. I want to see that final tag.
Did you guys ever see Jim Cornette's explanation of what wrestling is?
Mm-mm. No.
You got to look it up on YouTube. But basically, to paraphrase, Jimmy Cornette says wrestling is you driving by and seeing an altercation on the side of the road between a big guy and a little guy, and then you stop to look, but you're like, "Ooh, that big guy's too big. I can't do nothing." And all of a sudden, that big guy is wailing on the little guy, and you're watching, but you know you can't do anything to the big guy because he's bigger than you are. And then all of a sudden, that little guy fires up and starts coming back, and he starts beating the shit out of the big guy. And you're like, yeah, beat him up. Take care of him for me. And you become invested in what you see. That's
absolutely. Yes. And, you know, and and I've probably seen it, you know, probably 100 times that same interview because, you know, I did get to watch a little bit of USWA. But when I watched it again today, I'm like, I literally got goosebumps listening to Nick Bockwinkel talk. And he never raised his voice. He never got angry. He was kind of Ben Stein. He was so monotone. And I believed I believed every word that he said.
Absolutely. My trainer, who was my first promoter, basically had it worked out to where I ran roughshod. I formed a nice little faction with a rookie and two female wrestlers. And we formed a nice little faction. And I ran roughshod over the promotion for a year. A year, no one could get their hands on me. Okay, behind the scenes, why was that done? Because I was greener than goose shit, and I had to learn. Okay. Why to the fans, why? Who cares? They're not going to put their filthy hands on me until it came down to until it came down to a six-person, you know, no holds barred, no DQ cage match in which I got my butt whomped after the match and thrown in a cage a couple times, and I got color and whatnot, and people paid. They're like, are they finally going to get their hands on this guy? Well, you want to find out? Buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of it.
And you look at the guys, and you look at the guys that did that got that kind of heat for a long time. Bobby Heenan did it. You know, Jim Cornette did it. You know, J.J. Dillon, to an extent, did it. Paul Jones did it. You know, if you reach for them, they would skate away, and you're like, man, he almost had him, but maybe next
time. If you watch the old tapes from Mid-South, that was the first promotion Jimmy Cornette worked after leaving Memphis. And, man, as a fan of Mid-South, all you wanted to see was Bill Watts put his hands on Cornette. This little brat's got to get his.
And Bill Watts was another guy. I mean, he gets a lot of, you know, criticism for how he ran his business, but, I mean, he had his reasons, but the guy was, you know, at least two decades ahead of everybody else, you know, in running promotions, the way he did it, the feuds that he had and the guys that he drew. You know, I mean, you look at how popular he made, you know, the Junkyard Dog, you know, in the South, and what he did, you know, what he did, for the Junkyard Dog, and just all of it, you know. And then, like you said, Jim Cornette. I mean, I remember Jim Cornette having restraining orders against Bill Watts, and you can't touch him, and you know, they're literally face to face. But if Bill Watts touches him, you know, Bill Watts, it was like either loses promotion or gets heavily fined or whatever it was, and there always seemed to be something stopping Bill Watts from getting his physical hands on Jim Cornette until it was time for him to get his hands on him. And then the place would just go berserk because all of that frustration, all the time that we had invested in it.
How many Texas fans couldn't wait to see Gary Hart get his?
Yeah.
Michael Cohen, he dressed up in bubble wrap. Remember that match?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I don't think Gary Hart gets the recognition that he deserves for being the manager that he – because he is right in there with Heenan and Cornette and those guys. Like, he is there, you know, just the way he talked, you know, his eye – like, you could look in his eyes and think, man, this guy's like straight evil when you're looking at him, you know. And just the way he, you know, he presented himself, you know, in front of the camera was just fantastic.
Gary Hart was a huge influence on me. Okay. You know, everybody's asking me, you know, who would be in your Mount Rushmore of managers. And I've said it all along. If I had to pick four people to put on a Mount Rushmore as far as managers are concerned, it would be Bobby Davis, Gary Hart, J.J. Dillon, and Bobby Heenan. Those were the four greatest. Between Heenan and Cornette, because, you know, they're both interchangeable.
Right.
I mean, Dillon, Heenan, and Cornette are interchangeable. Three of them are interchangeable. But Gary Hart and Bobby Davis. Bobby Davis, because you wouldn't have managers without Bobby Davis. Period.
You wouldn't have all of those guys you just referenced without Bobby Davis.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Right.
They would not exist.
And what people don't realize is Bobby Davis became a bigger success outside the ring, working with the McDonald's Corporation, than he ever was inside the ring.
Right, yeah. And I think
he
that's where his legacy gets lost because of his his outside dealings, you know, which were obviously very lucrative. But
he started working with the McDonald's Corporation. He started working with Ray Kroc in the late 60s. So Bobby was only in the wrestling business for a short period of time.
Right.
Look at the influence.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, his legacy, I don't want to say tarnished because it has a negative connotation to it, but he doesn't get, you know, the respect that he deserves, you know, because, you know, it was much shorter than the average manager, I'll say. But, none of these guys would exist without him.
Abraham was very nice.
Don't forget, Bobby Davis was the first non-promoter to force the NWA to recognize Buddy Rogers as a champion. Buddy Rogers did not get the approval to win the title from Pat O'Connor because of a sponsoring promoter. Bobby Davis barnstormed them and basically forced the NWA's hand into granting him that title shot.
Right. And then the rest, they say, is history.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But if we had to put a Christmas card together, let's do this, guys. Let's play a little game. If you had to put a Christmas card together right now, utilizing anybody you could ever, give me your main event.
Wow.
And by ever, I mean ever. Not just 60s, 70s, 80s, and so forth. Ever in the main event.
Wow. Let me think.
I know Rhett has got
think...
one. Right. He's got three.
I got a good one.
Go ahead, Rhett.
All right. It is the holiday season, right? The main event has to be the eggnog match with Stacy Keibler and Tori Wilson.
That's your main event. Cool.
That's your main event. Okay.
That's my main event for the holiday season.
I'm going two boys from Texas, obviously, because I just think that, you know, World Class did so much for Christmas, and I think I'm going David Von Erich and a heel Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice.
What you got, Chaz? What's your main event?
Well, I'm gonna go older. And I'm gonna sell out a large arena. It's gonna be NWA title match, vacant. So it's gonna be a vacant NWA title match between Nature Boy Ric Flair and Jim Landis because styles make the match.
Wow.
Ronda's unbeatable. And Flair in his prime.
No time limit?
60 minutes.
Okay.
Two out of three falls, 60 minutes, traditional rules.
Wow. Yeah, I would pay money for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking Landis in three falls. I'm thinking that Flair takes the second fall, Landis takes the first and third.
Wow. Yeah, that would definitely sell out the largest arena that we have anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, boys, we're at the two-minute warning, so they're giving out shout-outs and wrapping things up.
Yeah, go ahead, Rap. What do you got?
I just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. You know, until next time, please don't drink and drive. That's all I got.
All right. What do you got, Chaz? Anything?
Again, you know what? Just a Merry Christmas to everybody, and thank you all again for your support and your well wishes, and you know, you guys getting behind me. I really appreciate it. It makes you understand what the holidays are all about. And again, I want to give a shout out to the amazing Velvet as he continues his battle with cancer, and Dave Burt and Stroh, who's getting stronger and stronger. You know, these guys are our family and our buddies, and you know, we like to see them get better and be back at full strength, or whatever full strength could be. You know, so you know, this is something that that we'd like to see. But anyway, other than that, just wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And yeah, we're going to be here before New Year's. So next Thursday is still December. So don't think we're taking 2 weeks off. We're not. We'll see you all
next
Thursday.
No, we're not. Yes, next Thursday, right back here, 8 o'clock. But I would encourage you to tune in on Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Brady Hickson in the Room. It's our annual drunken episode. You'll want to tune in for that. I mean, it could be probably the best show of the year, or it could go completely off the rails in the first half an hour. You'll have to tune in and listen and call in, and we'll be talking some wrestling. So we'll listen to Brady Hickson in the Room on Tuesday nights starting at 7:30, and then we'll be right back here next Thursday, WCW Retro at 8 o'clock. Guys, yes, have a Merry Christmas. Keep praying, you know, for all of our family that is, you know, recovering in various stages. And just be smart out there. Everybody have a great Christmas. It's been great, guys. Thanks.
Bye-bye, everybody, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys. Take care.
Hey, this is Total Package. Lex Luger. You're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
VOC Nation's own Stro Maestro suffered a major medical and financial catastrophe this year. From the VOC Nation family, to all of you, please continue to pray for Stro Maestro for his continued recovery. You can also donate to his cause, paypal.me/PapaStro. The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Kazzy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And they're in the pregnant.
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into, like, snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Stein of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts will include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Works. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Phil After has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, Tony here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill After's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, After's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found a true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think, I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion. You know?
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill After, and once again, we're speaking here with Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that contest?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a loss.
Does Bruno have anything to do?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.